Hello and welcome to recording number 27 of Gary Gygax's Saga of Old City, an annotated reading. It is July 6, 2021. I'm going to start here on page 201, chapter number 20, paragraph 1. Short rest in Midmeadow turned into a week's hiatus. Both of the lovers were loath to depart the town, for it meant the end of their ideal. They talked little of the journey ahead, nothing of the problem of facing Count Blemu with a thief's plea for his daughter's hand. Somehow it would work out. It was time for worrying about that later, but now was for them to enjoy. When Gord found that nearly all of the nobles and luckies he had taken from the cash treasure of the incautious bandits were depleted, he knew their time in the town was up, and that he and Evelie must press on. He couldn't ply his profession here without risk to the girl, and the reserve of gold was needed for possible emergencies along the way. Gord didn't know what to expect when he informed Evelie of their need to resume their journey, but he found himself surprised somewhat when she readily agreed. He must have showed some hurt at her ready consent, for she gave him love and told him tenderly that it was longing for her home and family, not a wish to destroy their newfound life together, which made her anxious to go on. That was the end of the discussion, and the next day they were on their way. Break. Here we have that those little group with Weasel and Mossback and Barl, whose treasure they found were, Gord is thinking that they were bandits. But whether that is a little bit of his thought process or a little omniscient viewpoint here, it's hard to say. Because I can't really see how Gord would know that they were bandits or not. There's a little foreshadow here of thinking about ahead about what kind of problems Gord, an unrecognized little thief, would have in asking for the daughter of Count Blumu's hand in marriage. Really nothing more about the setting or that, you know, adds to Gord, except it shows again that his character still seems like a little naive around romance and such. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 201, the last paragraph. Gord found a caravan of merchants and associated folk heading south for Warmtham, a town in distant Nyrond. Such a train would travel slowly, but its mercenary guards would help assure a safe arrival. He and Evelie posed as newly married gentlefolk traveling to see relatives. A sennight or so after embarking, they reached the carved stone markings, the northernmost claim of King Archibald, third of that name to reign as sovereign over all Nyrond. Claims aside, the place was borderland at best, and both Gord and Evelie were glad for the security of mail-clad horsemen and foot soldiers as well, as that provided by a strange man in the odd cap, who was certainly a priest of some sort or a magic user. Despite the seeming protection afforded by the fellow's presence, Gord avoided him and made sure never to look at his eyes. So we know now that Midmeadow is actually not in, north of Nyrond. Here we have King Archibald name, the third, as the King of Nyrond. And we have here that Gord is very uncomfortable around a priest or a magic user, and must think that they have some power by, you know, looking into the eyes of a magic user or a priest, as Gord avoids his eyes. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 202, paragraph 2. composition of the caravan changed from time to time at various stops along the way. As the train reached deeper into Nairon, it shrank a bit, but its progress continued apace. Travelers had angled a bit eastward at Thekham, and were now going directly towards the rising sun. When he inquired as to the reason for this, Gord was informed by one of the merchants that they were aimed now at the Flinty Hills, where the headwaters of the Duntide River were shallow and easy to cross. Thereafter, the caravan would be but 2 days' travel from Wamtham. So, I don't know if it's on the map or not. We have the name of a town, city, or village, Thekham. It doesn't sound like it'd be a city, but... And then we have that there is a shallows that will allow crossing at the Duntide River, at the headwaters of the Duntide River, in the Flinty Hills. Alright. And some time distance here that it's... after that, it's only 2 days' travel from Wamtham.
It is on the map. I'm working on getting that.
Okay. To anyone listening, you know, hopefully down the road we'll have associated maps available. But if you do take a look, there usually is a map that will have these various named towns or villages give you a sense of the geography of the travel here. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 202, paragraph 3. It proved to be exactly as the trader had said. Although he had neglected to predict that in the final leg of their journey, they would have encounters with some savage creatures and a skirmish with a band of humanoids bent on rapine. The latter instance would have been a serious affair had not the Archmage, as Gord learned afterwards was his status, used his arcane arts to cause a series of fiery blasts to erupt in the midst of the Gnoll horde. This resulted in the incineration of their chief and his principal assistants, as well as roasting sundry others of the vicious humanoids, and the survivors turned and fled in rout. The contacts with monsters, one had been nothing more than a hungry wyvern, brought down from the sky by a shower of quarrels and arrows, while the other was a small band of hill giants who never came close to the caravan after seeing its size and soldiery. And we have up on the Greyhawk Fiction text channel a picture there, Wamthan, and not quite sure what it means. It's something other than a normal village square with an X in it. We have Thekham, and it is on... Probably that must be is the Duntide River there, I guess.
Yeah, it was hard for me to see in that area what river that was.
Yeah, I'm just guessing because it seems to be a major river, and it is. It is mentioned here. I don't know. The headwaters of the Duntide, and Wamtham's supposed to be 2 days. It is the Duntide.
Yeah, it flows down from Wamtham into Relmord.
All right. Okay, that's good. All right. And now, in this last section here, we have the encounters. We have this business with an Archmage, obviously throwing fireballs. And again, it is part of the thing where part of the Greyhawk setting, especially Gygax, is here, where magic and magic users are a real rarity, and that you know, even Gord, coming from the city of Greyhawk, he isn't really comfortable or aware of them. And as he started there as a very low level first as a, you know, the beggar and the orphan, and moved up to being a, you know, freelance thief, so that he may not have been particularly in the company of such people. He did at the end was participating in a game of kind of cards, and one of those was a high priest of Zilchus. So he has been around magic users or clerics, but he still seems very uncomfortable with them, and in the story they have not made a major appearance. It's interesting to see here that they're in Nyrond, and there is a marauding band of gnolls. And that just tells you that even in the most settled of areas, and like Nyrond, there's still a lot of wilderness out there, and there's still the movement of monsters and humanoids. The other creature they encounter was a wyvern. And the other that's more surprising a little bit to me were the hill giants, who what I imagine are, there must be hill giant colonies in the Flinty Hills. All right, I am going to restart. It is page 202 and the final paragraph. Omthim was a bustling trade center, and both Gord and Evely enjoyed the 3 days they spent there after taking their leave of the disbanding caravan. A rest from their traveling refreshed them both, and Gord in particular found the place interesting, both in form and populace. Omthim was a typical old Aridian town, with its architecture and construction showing a great deal of dwarven and gnomish influence. There were, in fact, fair numbers of these sorts of folk, as well as many halflings, going about their business in the town. Evely had seen the place before, but Gord was quite unused to such surroundings, and he greatly enjoyed sightseeing and mingling with the residents. During their travels about the town, Gord and Evely made the acquaintance of a group of traders and pilgrims who are bound for the town of Inspa, to the southeast. Having discovered nothing better, and being anxious to get on their way again, the two set about with this assemblage. About halfway along the route to Inspa, Gord and Evely took their leave early one morning and headed for Finton Village, angling northeast away from the track of the caravan. All right, we have just a little bit about Wampum here. A bustling trade center, and you know, we see that it's with a disbanding caravan, it means that it is the end place, the place where these caravan at the end is headed toward, and that there they're going to reform for other places. It makes it more of a center. Where people are coming to and then going off into other directions. We are learned that it is a typical old Aridian town. That speaks of how it wouldn't have been a center for the Flan, which, you know, I'd assume a lot of these things, since there'd probably be little Sul influence, the mixture here in buildings and such would be Aridian, Flanish. And we have the construction being dwarven and gnomish, obviously from the Flinty Hills. Oh, and it is a metropolis, according to our map here. And that goes in with the bustling trade center, that it is a population of 25,000 plus, according to the legend of the map here.
I think that specific one is a fortified metropolis.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yes. It's definitely, it's got the dotted lines in the legend around the square.
I think she's trying to represent crenellations or something.
Yeah. So it would be a walled town. Mm-hmm. All right. And then we have that this is also a place that where there were dwarves, gnomes, and halflings in enough abundance so that it seemed unusual to Gord. And Gord's coming from an area where, you know, City of Greyhawk, where there's an entire foreign quarter, and still seeing larger groups of halflings, dwarves, and gnomes is out of the ordinary for him, which goes back to the City of Greyhawk and kind of tells you about the population there, that the demi-humans are not in such abundance there. Even though Wormtham is probably no more than half the size of Gygax's City of Greyhawk, it still seems to have a bigger percentage population of demi-humans. Enough so that Gord, you know, enjoys it, sightseeing and mingling around the residents. We have here that there's a Fintan village, I would guess, that is northeast of Wormtham. Not visible on this map, but perhaps on a larger scale one. I see a big rapid.
Oh, I found it.
Oh, you found it. Excellent.
Fintan?
Fintan. Fintan village.
It's very close to the Flinties. Probably right. The Flinty foothills.
Now, is it northeast of Wormtham, or is it just
it's
east?
Southeast.
Southeast?
Yeah, I think they said they went south with that caravan to Inspa.
That's right. That's right. I'm jumping.
Maybe they were trying to throw off anybody who might be watching them.
Yeah, because it says that they took, is it north east of Inspa?
I haven't found Inspa yet.
Okay, because it is, does say they headed southeast to Inspa. Then it says that they traveled northeast toward Fintan Village, and that the track of the caravan had had been going, I guess, either east or
there's
south.
There's another town, Degulan, D-E-G-H-U-L-A-N.
Yeah.
So it's southeast from Wormtham to Degulan, and then northeast from Degulan to Fintan, slightly, not a lot, but I'm going to
okay.
Put the map.
All right, I'm going to restart right here, and it is page 203, paragraph 3. Rutted road led in the general direction they desired. The two had been told that Fintan was no more than half a day's ride, although it proved to be somewhat more. They came to the pretty little cluster of buildings before darkness fell, and spent a comfortable night at a small inn there. Patrols of Nyrondel cavalry were more frequent here along the eastern border of the realm than along the western frontier, and such places as Fintan were quite secure and peaceful. A few days more of riding along a rough easterly road brought them to a far wilder area, worn down portion of the southern rakers known as the Flinty Hills. There was no possibility of avoiding the foothills without going far out of their way, through even worse terrain than the Flinty Hills. A path to the north, if such were feasible or necessary, would force them to try to negotiate the jagged peaks of the Raker Mountains, which were set like a wall between the western lands of the Iridians and the Flanae and the barbarian realms to north and east. A southerly route would require them to pass either through or all the way around the huge Adri forest. They had neither the strength of arms to do the former, nor the time to do the latter. Break.
We see the Principality of Inspa on this map, which is south of the Flinty Hills, but Gord is talking about having to travel through some section of the Flinty Hills here. And by the map, you can kind of see they have a minor road traveling through. I don't spot, but the text is very small on this map. I don't spot Finton. And so we're given here a little bit of distances and travelong, some information about how Finton and the eastern border sees more Nirondel patrols and that it's a safer area. You know, it's safe and secure. And then we have the talk about the rough easterly road traveling through the Flinty Hills, and about how that Rakers beyond them and then into the Adri Forest, the it's kind of a dividing line between the more wild east and the more settled west. Oh, there we see Finton. And on the other map, yeah, there's Dugulin, and between Dugulin and Owlsthorpe, there is Finton.
Right.
Now, it looks to me like both Finton and Dugulin are walled, while they have Owlsthorpe. And they have this as kind of a river valley, and no other tracks being shown. And it's not a regular road. I see it's broken up, and then from Owlsthorpe, it shows a very smaller track. So I'm not sure if this is, you know, not really adhering to the book, but more toward later information. It's still pretty much on, you know, there's no mention I've seen here of Owlsthorpe.
It could be Living Greyhawk stuff.
Yeah, but here, let me restart. It is page 203, the final paragraph. The road, such as it was, bent sharply southward and ran along the edge of the steep uplands, quite the opposite of what Gord had hoped for. It eventually led to Innspaugh. Following it would take them not less than 100 leagues out of their way, and a good portion of their subsequent journey would then have to be through the treacherous Adri. To establish where the road would take them, they rode to the top of a great tor nearby, and from its summit surveyed the course of the artery. The road, much to Gord's dismay, kept southward. From this vantage point, however, Evely spied a path that twisted and turned in a generally northeastward direction, disappearing quickly enough, of course, amidst the rolling terrain. It was obviously no mere game trail, so they chose to take this. Going was slow, even following the trail. The rough ground and steep ascents and descents made any pace above a walk very dangerous for their horses. In many places, both riders were forced to dismount and lead their animals. Gord wished that he had had sufficient foresight to bring mules along. The trail did at least show evidence of human use, and from the signs of sheep and goats, there was hope that small communities would be encountered along the way. While they had food and water with them, Gord did not desire to spend nights camped in the open in such a wild area. A more immediate problem soon arose, however. The path they were following split into two forks, one leading nearly straight east, the other in a more northerly direction. Both showed signs of use. Break. Now, I would guess we have probably a look here at the route they're taking from Owlsthorpe, which obviously doesn't, so far it seems like that's not a named town or even a mentioned town in the Gord books, but we do see a rough trail heading up a kind of river valley into the Flinty Hills, and then splitting in two a little distance from Owlsthorpe. I'm not quite sure, you know, I'm not quite sure of the actual distance in leagues or miles here between where the road from Finton is heading south and where It splits off where the rough track splits off in a northern northeasterly. From this map, I can definitely see that there is a kind of more sharp, like a 90-degree angle split of the rough trail, one heading north and the other heading east.
It looks like east is where they should go.
Yeah, seeing it from an overview. And from them, they can't really see, but it is described as a very rough track. And then the problem is east is through the Adri, which they're very worried about at this point. Let's see. I'm going to restart. It is page 204, paragraph 3. Heavily, have you any sense as to which we should take? Gord asked his companion. I'm unable to detect any difference in the twain. Left or right, it makes no difference as far as I can see, she replied, after pondering both paths for a minute. Neither seems to direct us straight toward our goal, so I must ask you to choose. Break. I'm breaking here because there's a little point that I missed in the last paragraph. And that, it's they're encountering sheep and goats.
Oh,
and
right.
That is important because even though it seems like a very minor thing, for there to be sheep, maybe even over the goats who have a good ability of going up difficult terrain and perhaps could quickly escape something up the flinty hills, sheep are particularly defenseless creatures. So if he's encountering sheep, then it's very likely there's no predators about. And that really speaks that area, whenever they see herds of sheep or any significant amount of sheep in the area, that should tell them that there probably is not any monsters or humanoids around, who would prey on the sheep. I've never really heard of any humanoids who raise sheep. So this area right there on this rough trail should be a fairly safe area. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 204, and it is paragraph 5. Eventually, Gord opted to follow the northern branch, for it looked somewhat less rough, and it showed evidence of more recent usage. They followed it for several hours, and then it divided into three. Gord followed the central trail, for it curved east. This track led them into the very heart of the flinty hills, where the steep-sided mounds were highest. The afternoon shadows were lengthening by now, and Gord began to feel concerned about where they would find safety for themselves during the dark hours to come. All too soon, twilight was upon them, and still no sign of habitation was to be seen. A ravine ahead offered the most promise, so the pair rode in that direction, following a narrow path between two steep mounds. Suddenly, a small boulder came rolling and bounding down the rocky wall to their right, throwing off splinters of stone as it fell, and then coming to rest with a crash just ahead of them. Both horses spooked at this, and Gord and Evelie had all they could manage to control their mounts, as the animals bucked and did their best in the somewhat cramped quarters to turn and gallop in the opposite direction. By the time they succeeded in bringing the frightening creatures under control, the trap had been sprung. Surrender or die, the booming voice came from behind them. Gord pulled his short sword out in one swift motion as he wheeled his gelding around to face the challenger. His gaze fell upon not one, but a dozen men standing some 50 or 60 feet away. They were variously clad in studded jacks, sarks of iron rings, and leather coats and skins. Most bore long spears and short hafted axes. One large fellow, who stood slightly ahead of the others, leaned on a huge, double-bitted battle axe. This one again bellowed in a stentorian voice.
Cast down that toothpick fool. Look to your flanks and rear. Without dropping his blade, Gord quickly glanced left and right. On the rim of the cut they were in stood another dozen or so men, similar to those he had first seen, but holding crossbows, rocks, javelins, and the like. A rapid look over his shoulder revealed yet more of the hillmen, spearmen and slingers this time, the latter with slings whirling slowly. By ambush to wayfarers, Gord called to the headman, "We are peaceful and threaten you not." "True, you pose us no threat," said the tall leader as he strode toward the trapped couple. "It is we who are the danger, and if you do not now surrender, you will be dead shortly." The men behind him followed closely on his heels as he continued to advance. Seeing no other course, Gord tossed his sword to the ground and dismounted. He voiced a brief instruction to terrified Evelyn to stay where she was. Nearly frozen with fear, she managed to nod her head in compliance. Then, rather than waiting for the hillman to come to him, the young thief walked boldly toward his would-be captor, allowing a bit of swagger to be apparent. As the two closed their distance between them, Gord was surprised to discern that the hillman was fully head and shoulders taller than he was. The leader must have been nearly 7 feet tall, and the warriors behind him all easily topped 6 feet. Gord kept walking, intending to meet his adversary before he and his fellows could get too close to Evelyn. The hillman cooperated by halting his advance, and Gord strolled up to within a couple of paces of where the leader stood, leaning on his great axe. Determined not to allow his fear to show, Gord spoke just as he came to a halt. "Well, you're big enough, but I always heard that you hill folk were courageous, not cowards." The great fellow stood up straight, grasped the handle of his axe firmly, and glared hard at the smaller man before him. The others behind muttered threats and shot back insults in response to Gord's disparaging of their bravery. Booming forth a laugh, the hillman chief retorted, "It is no craven act to surround eggs with straw so that they remain unbroken until you're ready to eat them. And dogs hunt in packs because they desire company," Gord answered smoothly, never taking his mocking gaze from the man. "Dogs, you call us dogs," the huge hillman roared, flashing his battle axe into motion, preparing to cleave the small man in two for the insult just voiced. Gord did not flinch. "You are truly a lion to thus bravely say so fierce an adversary, even unarmed as I am." This Gord said loudly and sarcastically as he could, expecting the great curved weapon to slice downward any moment. The others behind the leader whooped and guffawed at this remark, for Gord indeed appeared to be more like a sheep than a deadly foeman. One of their number called out mockingly, "Don't dirty your axe, Rendell. I'll slay the magpie with a blow from my palm." "Have your woman nearby to assist you in your recovery, in case I am tougher than the little children you usually bully," Gord answered in a scathing tone. "Better let the toughest among you handle the likes of me." Rendell had stood poised with the axe held aloft during this brief exchange. He suddenly realized how stupid this posture was and brought the weapon down to rest again. He made a successful effort to control his ire and now looked at the slight man he was facing, the slight respect rather than the disdain he had shown originally. "Your mouth is as big as any dragon's, and your tongue faster than a scorpion sting," began the leader. "I say you are a braggart and a liar, little man. I give you leave to pick up your sword, and then we will fight. When I cut you into pieces small enough to satisfy me, I'll satisfy my other needs upon your woman there, and then honor will be restored." Hillman had been gathering closer as their chief spoke. and his last statement brought a cheer from them. Here was sport they could all enjoy. If I should triumph, Gord retorted. This question nearly collapsed the hillmen with laughter. But one bellow from Rendell, and they fell into silence, broken by a smattering of stifled ha-ha's and sotto-voiced jests. Rendell sneered at Gord and said, "Then one of my brothers here will fight you and avenge my death." "How many cats it takes to kill a mouse," Gord interrupted, shaking his head in mock wonderment. "But then, I suppose, one mouse such as I would be worth 10 cats such as you." This brought a new round of scowls and grumbles from the hillmen. Shouts of "Kill 'em now, and let's get to the fun part, and don't waste time," were intermixed with vulgar comments and general jeering. The hulking leader again shouted his men to silence, and kept up the dialogue with Gord. "I am the cat, then, and if the mouse escapes my claw," here Rendell hefted the axe for emphasis, "then he and his mouse mane shall pass freely amongst the other toms as they will." At that, the hillmen shouted their dissent, but the chief glared them down. "I, Rendell, have spoken, and my word is law. Would any of you dispute that? If so, I shall settle that matter before this little one is a hacked and bloody corpse." None took up the proffered contest. Gord smiled grimly to himself as he turned and walked back to where his small blade lay. At least he had gained them their liberty as their prize. Now all that was necessary was for him to be victorious in mortal combat with a giant hillman armed with a battle axe as large as Gord himself. As he came near to Evely, Gord murmured under his breath for her to remain mounted and be prepared to ride for her life. Scant hope there. He then picked up his short sword, gazed for a moment at Evely's pale face, and turned to face Rendell, who was ready. The hillman was already moving toward Gord, this time not waiting for the smaller man to come to him. Gord only had time to get a couple of paces farther away from Evely and their horses. Then Rendell was upon him. The hillman's axe swept before him in a great arc, and Gord would have been cloven in twain at the waist, had he not leapt nimbly aside. He continued moving sideways, circling around Rendell so as to place himself in the position of the huge foeman had held moments before, and get clear of the area where Evely and the horses stood. If an ill-aimed blow struck some onlooker, he cared not, but he meant to spare the girl and the animals such hazard. Gord backed slowly now, crouching little, with his sword held low and ready for stroke or parry. Rendell spun round quickly for a man of his side, using the momentum of his missed blow to assist the motion. Still whirring the twin-bladed weapon, the chief eyed Gord's position and tactic. He stepped forward without hesitation, now bringing the battle axe up and down in a chopping stroke that Gord find impossible to block with his small sword. Instead of trying to either dodge once again or parry hopelessly, Gord crouched lower and leapt straight at the large man, just as the axe was being brought back up for another chop. As he lunged, Gord lashed out with the sword in his right hand, looping the short blade in a cut aimed at the axeman's knees. Rendell heaved mightily to cut short the upward arc of his axe and bring the weapon back down. At the same time, he tried to move his legs backward out of harm's way. As the result of this combination of movements, the hillman overbalanced and fell forward. Gord's sword bit into Rendell's leather leggings an instant before he threw his body to the side to avoid the hillman's toppling body. The blade drew blood, but the attack did little damage other than to score first wound. In a match where only death meant victory, this made no difference. Gord gave no thought to self-congratulation, instead somersaulted himself away so as to be well clear of any possible counterattack. He turned and bounced to his feet in time to see Rendell
Springing upright, Battleaxe still clutched to both hairy hands, and murder in his eyes. "I'm no joint of beef to be cleaved, oaf," called Gord in his most mocking tone. "Where are you boasts now, Windbag?" Here was a small advantage. Gord thought might be built upon. An opponent blind with fury was an easier foe to vanquish, and Gord needed any advantage he could muster. "I'll show you boasting with my steel," the hillman replied between clenched teeth. And then he moved forward with a blurring windmill of axe-work, the double-headed weapon whining from the force of its passage back and forth through the air. Gord had to skip and dance to keep clear of the whirling deathblade advancing upon him. Rendell was still calm enough to demonstrate real skill at arms, and Gord knew he must push the man with more than words. The young thief put his Rene-learned acrobatics into play, doing a quick backflip. As his feet rose over his head and his knees approached his chin, Gord drew his small knife from his boot. As he landed, he reversed his grip so that his left hand palmed the weapon with handle downmost. The grim axe-wielder, not noticing that his foe now held a second weapon, saw no threat in Gord's demonstration of gymnastic ability. In fact, he read it as a desperate maneuver to avoid the press he was employing to sunder his opponent's defense, and then the opponent. The figure eight of the battle axe's pattern flattened so as to become more offensive and less protective to he who wove it. At that moment, Gord let fly the knife, aiming not at the hillman's vital portions, most of which were shielded by blade or mail anyway, but at an exposed portion of forearm, left free of armor by extension in the tack. Break. Well, that was quite a bit of action right here so far, and I'm breaking because there's at least things worthy, I think, of notation. One is Gord's now using his Rene acrobatics in his combat ability. It's also that Gord seems to have improved as a fighter. And here we have Gord doing called shots. One of the other things is that it mentions that there is a mail, that the Hillman Chief Rendell is wearing mail, but his legs are in leather armor. It's an interesting mixture there, but not usually how armor class is judged in the, AD&D game, where you would have normally not talking about armor location, so that you might talk about having a helm that provides something in case there's a headshot, perhaps through a critical hit, but not really talking about, say, armor that is a kind of a mixed type where there would be leather armor on the legs to allow more mobility, and yet chainmail that would cover the chest and the perhaps down over the legs as a kind of skirt going down over the thighs. We have, going through this is mostly about the action of the combat. The other thing I noted was that the language here so far is more fantasy medieval or fantasy than what Gygax has been doing, having a lot of the vulgarity and curses and a lot of the language that comes out from these bandit types being very like early 20th century, almost gangster-like language. So this is a little bit off of that and more into a kind of fantasy language right here. All right, I am going to restart. Is page number 209, and it is the second paragraph from the end.
"You foul little bastard!" Rendell roared in anger and surprise as the keen blade sank into his arm. "Bastard yourself, you bloated windbag!" Gord spat out. Reply, "That great axe you use is twice the size of this blade. You offered no equalizer, so I merely provided my own." The huge hillman made no reply to this, other than to jerk the knife from his arm and hurl it back at Gord. This hasty tactic gave Gord yet another opportunity. In his desire to use Gord's own weapon to harm its hurler, Rendell had taken his right arm from the haft of his battle axe. Although the injured left member still held the weapon firm, it now lacked the strength to use it offensively. As the hillman threw the knife at his adversary, his wounded arm allowed the head of the axe to drop. Gord darted forward, drawing his dagger from his belt, and simultaneously bringing his sword up to knock away the oncoming knife. Then he brought the sword back across his body in a backhand slash aimed at Rendell's face. As the hillman instinctively brought his axe up one-handed to ward off the slash, Gord struck out with the dagger he now held in his left hand. The edge of the smaller weapon easily cut through the thick leather bracer shielding Rendell's left wrist. Again, Gord drew blood. This wound was serious enough to cause the hillman to drop the axe in the bargain. Rendell had to back away in great haste, his bleeding arm clutched close to his body, to avoid a flurry of thrusts and cuts from Gord. Now the hillman had only his own dagger for a weapon. He drew the blade with his good arm and used it in a vain attempt to defend himself against Gord's whirling weapons, while he tried to circle around to where he could regain his fallen axe. He tried, Gord gave him that. The big fighter was brave enough and determined to win. No matter how he moved, however, Gord's sword was there, keeping away from the axe. Combat became a terrible game. Soon the hillman was dripping blood from half a dozen new wounds delivered by Gord's sword and dagger. Gord's black garments had several gashes, but his body had only been scratched or nicked two or three times. And I did miss what the comment was about the called shots, and that is that Gord is particularly targeting an exposed arm. And he's also kind of targeting that leg shot, which again is outside what normally would be in the game. But here we're talking about story rather than particular game mechanics, unless Gygax at this point is using called shots. I that had been something that had been discussed early on in AD&D, is that the simulation of combat, did not allow for this kind of things because it was more of a generalization rather than blow by blow. It's like not every arrow that hit was actually sinking into the character to remove hit points. It could be that it withdrew hit points because it was causing the exertion, and that it wasn't necessarily every wound was not every blow was not necessarily wound, even if it reduced hit points. And so we're looking at this combat and perhaps more of Gygax trying to put it into the story form, but also perhaps Gygax thinking at this point, he's using Gord here, using those Rene acrobat skills, then we're also seeing that the hillman chief does not seem to be as good with a knife as he is, as Gord is, with his short sword and dagger. And it could be that it is a matter of limited weapon proficiencies where he doesn't know the knife, or that the use of a knife, somehow Gygax is using knife fighting as a separate, way to combat. And that he, judges a thief better at knife fighting
or then, you know, an equally leveled an equally leveled warrior, because the Hillman really does appear to be a warrior, and we can see now that he's wounded several times, and we go back to what AD&D is, that he would have enough hit points as a mid-level character, NPC, that he would, especially fighting against a short sword and dagger, he should be able to take a number of blows before he's killed. We also have here something about the bleeding wound and the wounded arm inconveniencing him and making him less agile, like with a combat penalty, and perhaps even a wound that is causing more hit point damage as it goes along. If not, then that is a way to show that in the game. If it's not what was meant and it was just a dramatization of combat, then it is also something that does work if you're thinking about how the game is and how you can describe it as a DM. All right, I'm going to restart.
Oh, I was going to say, there's also examples of him taunting, too. I mean, I don't know if that's the specific mechanic either, but it's something that he's incorporating into his fighting.
Yeah, and he specifically mentions that somebody who's angry is a worse fighter than someone who's not. We can see the rudiments of things that they wanted to do in later editions of the game to kind of take that into effect. It fits in with AD&D 1E well enough, and it just is a subtle little addition. And always, what I did personally with AD&D was always add on ideas and try them out in combat and skills and stuff. And here you could see where it would make sense to be able to add a disadvantage for, like, the taunting having a cause for a disadvantage, as well as called shots and wound, disadvantages from wound and bleeding wounds, and all this kind of in addition to the regular rule system. All right, I'm going to restart right here. It is page 210 and the final paragraph. The spectators to this grim match had grown ominously quiet now. Ward knew that soon one or more of them would forget about ceremony and come to Rendell's aid. Then all hell would break loose, and the Hillman would certainly hack him to bits. Time was just about up. Sudden stab by Rendell gave Gord the opportunity he sought. He purposely overreacted, leaping backward, seeming to stumble a little, and moving away from the battle axe at last. Rendell quickly stepped forward and bent over, fingers clawing for his fallen weapon, as he took his eyes off his opponent for a split second. When they looked up again, they saw only death. Ward's sword and dagger struck home, first hitting his neck, the other piercing the steel mesh protecting his body. The Hillman's huge frame toppled over, coming to rest upon the axe he had so desperately sought, and the combat was over. "Mouse has bitten cat," Gord said, looking from face to face around him, choosing words that he hoped would drive home his point without inciting the other Hillman to attack. "The cat is dead, and the mouse goes freely with his mouse mane, as this doughty man promised." No one moved to stop him, as Gord cleaned and sheathed his blades, sword, dagger, and knife. He did not seek to despoil the fallen man, but simply turned his back on Rendell's corpse and walked slowly to where Evely awaited atop her palfrey, holding his own steed's reins. Her expression showed nothing. She was clever, Gord thought, keeping his own face a mask also. It was still touch and go as to whether or not these men would actually honor the promise of their slain leader. One false move, or wrong word, could set them off. Ward swung up into the saddle and kneed his mount into a slow walk,
heading in the direction he and Evelie had been going before the hillmen had surrounded them. There was no attempt to stop him. He could hear mutterings beginning to grow in volume behind them. Gord slowed his mount and turned his body, allowing his companion to move ahead of him, and called back. "If I come this way again," he said, "I'll bring 100 mark or so dogs with me to guarantee safe passage." "You will need more than that to escape us again," a voice called back. There was some laughter at that. "Scurry mouse," another hillman shouted defiantly, "else we might forget a dead man's word." At that, Gord kicked his horse into a trot and slapped the girl's mount as he drew parallel with it. Together, they cantered around the boulder ahead of them, out of the narrow passage, and onto a better path beyond, as the last rays of the sun painted the sky with a sanguine hue. Break. Well, there's not much here. It does tell a little bit about what the hillman should be like if you wanted to run this and use the suggestions by Greyhawk and the Gygax in the story, is that the hillmen do have a sense of honor, and like the final hillman said, that they are honoring their slain chief, and then. On page 212, there is a Caldwell illustration of now the Gord now holding short sword and his poignard, his long tooth dagger, and the large body of the armored hillman. Although in this he's wearing a chest plate instead of mail, we do see his double headed axe. Again, it is, it's a Caldwellist illustration, so it's a nice little picture here of Gord and the slain hillman. And the hillman looks proportionally big, so he's got that down. Otherwise, there's just, a little bit here about what you could expect in this encounter with the hillman, and that they do... they do control this area right here. There's a few minutes left, and we're near the end of this chapter. I'm not sure if it's a quick read or not. I'm going to give it a try. All right, we are on page 213, and it is paragraph 2. "You seem unaffected by what just occurred," Evelie said in a small, distant voice. "What is there to be troubled about, my dear one?" Gord replied casually. "After all, I defeated that fool, took his comrades' jibes and insults, and we rode free. That is fitting. The way of things in such places as this." "I see," the girl said softly, and then spoke no more. Gord insisted that they keep going well into the night, for he suspected some of the hillmen would attempt to find them during darkness and gain revenge. He walked ahead, leading both mounts, as Evelie dozed in her high-backed saddle. After they had traveled in this fashion for a couple of miles, the narrow track met another, which grew into a road. Gord was confident that this route must lead to somewhere they could stay, and he wanted to make good time. He woke the sleepy girl and jumped back aboard his mount. Tired horses were brought into a trot by much urging, and within an hour the pair rode into a tiny cluster of huts, a place they later learned was called Owlsthorpe. All right, break. I was trying to go for the end of the chapter, but I'm going to end it here because here we have a little bit of discontinuity. We have an Owlsthorpe on the map that was shown. It should not be in the location that had been shown. We have Owlsthorpe coming from Finton. You come from Finton, go east, and then there's like a little river valley, and then there's Owlsthorpe on this map. And then north of Owlsthorpe, you're obviously going into this rough track north into the Flinty Hills,
where it does split northerly and easterly. And here, the Owlsthorpe that Gord is describing is far north of the Owlsthorpe that is shown on this map. So I do think it looks like that location is a bit of a mistake. The only other thing I find of note is that there's something with Evelie right here, that since she falls into quietness after Gord's fight with the Hillman, it just seems to me that I get a feel that something is up with Evelie. All right, we're at 7 o'clock, and I'm going to end for the night. There's a little bit more to go. I want to make sure I tell you the last page here is 213, and it will help me list the pages by recording when I get around to that. All right, I'm going to... Evelie is bloodthirsty and wanted the fight to last longer. All right.
That's it. Good night.
Good night, Chris. All right, I'm going to summon up Craig here, our handy-dandy recording bot. And that will be it for...